Hi, my name is Agile, and I support Gen X Grown Up through Patreon, and I believe you should too. Just go to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown-Up Podcast listener, to this backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown-Up Podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, is George.
Woo!
And Mo is here.
Hi?
You're not required to woo just because George did. It's all right.
I feel okay. Like I either had to go the opposite or something, you know?
The backtrack edition of our show is where we pick a single topic and dig in deep on that. Something from our youth growing up that's different or changed dramatically. And in this episode, we decided to talk about Generation X music platforms. Yeah. And the reason we picked this topic,
not platform shoes.
That's
no, not talking about disco yet.
Platform video games.
This show will drop on the 10th of January. And just yesterday, January 9th, is the 18th anniversary of the launch of iTunes by Apple.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. Wait, what year was that again?
2001.
Wow, is that long ago?
Yeah.
Jeez.
I think it's fair to say that iTunes or some variation on it is the new de facto method by which audio is distributed.
Yeah,
that
for
is
sure.
the platform
yeah.
that you get music. We all had the ways we got music growing up, which is what we're going to talk about, but it's a pivotal time in history, that 2001 launch of iTunes. Apple actually didn't invent iTunes. They bought that from a company called SoundJam MP.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they acquired it. They took away, it was kind of like Winamp a little bit.
Okay.
They took out the ability to skin it. They took out some other features. They kind of appled it down to make it real kind of sterile. Initially, it wasn't thought of as a way to buy music, but real quickly, it became the way that everybody
got the music. Was it originally built on a Windows platform, do you know? Or do you think it was always built for the Mac OS platform?
That's a great question. I don't know that for sure.
Because right now, iTunes on Windows sucks.
It does. Yep.
Yeah.
In fact, they didn't release the Windows version until 2003. I still resent them for doing it. But they had to, because for a long time, that was the only way you could do an iPod or an iPhone if you wanted to have it on Windows.
If you were to sync it, you had to use it.
Right. If the only way you could activate your phone was plugging it in physically to iTunes, the only way to update your phone, so they had to get outside of the Apple ecosystem. Also, we use iTunes a lot, as it is the de facto kind of like authority for podcasts. If you have a review on iTunes, you're not a podcast almost,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
But well before iTunes, what we're going to talk about in this backtrack is how we purchased, listened to, collected, had music in our hands before digital download was a thing. And that's what we're going to talk about in this show right now.
Look what's coming in your mail. Get 11 albums for only $1 when you join the Columbia Record and Tape Club. Terrific? Well, I'm about to tell you how to go this offer one better. First, look inside. You'll see over 300 great albums. It's easy to find 12 you want because you have a choice of all the top labels.
As we get into then talking about these Gen X music platforms, music didn't begin with Gen X. We perfected it, but it didn't begin with us. So there, as we were born and coming in to our own collecting music, vinyl was already a thing.
We didn't
invent that. That was not a Gen X invention. Thank you, gramophone. Thank you, Edison. The ability to have recorded music in our homes. But vinyl was the first way that I collected music, to be sure.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I can get you on that. Yeah.
So we had our 33 and a third. We had our 45 RPM. You had this 78 RPM that I never had one of, but it's a thing, I know. And that was just, for anyone who's grown today in the world of digital music, the whole kind of reason collecting music was a big deal for us growing up, in my opinion at least, is there's something really cool and tactile about those big LP records.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, because it's like, I remember collecting albums and just having the album.
Mm-hmm.
You had the sleeves. Yeah. You had
not just the album, but the album art. That was
the artwork industry.
The photographers or the artists who made that album art. There are collectible albums just for the art. It has nothing to do with the music sometimes.
And there are so many parts of that album. So first there's the artwork on it.
Right.
And then sometimes there's the structure of it. Is it a gatefold? Does it open up two or three times? Mm-hmm. And then inside there's the sleeve that the record is inside of, this paper sleeve that sometimes had more artwork on it or had lyrics on it or had candid photos of the band or whatever. And it was an experience that you could enjoy. It was like going to buy an Atari video game. You went to the mall, you got the game, and on the way home, you got the box open, you're reading the instruction manual, you're looking at all the screenshots. It's almost like you're getting into the game, you know, in that sense. You could get into the music before you even put that thing down and put the needle on it. It was a larger experience than download and push play.
I still remember, like, when I had this ritual, whenever I got a new album, it was like, take it home, open it, put the record on, like, start it playing, and then read through the album cover.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of like a listening, and it was a whole experience.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think one of my early 33 and a third album art cover things that I remember is the Eagles. I believe it was their second or third album, the one that has the iconic image of the eagle flying over the desert on the cover, and then you open it up and it's got them sitting around a campfire on the inside of the album.
Yes, of course.
But the most famous part of that is they're upside down when you open it up, and the reason for that was because the executive in charge of the record company, he went against the original artist creation. The guys who did the original artwork for that, they had designed the cover so that you would not only open it up like a book format, but then you would also unfold it from top to bottom, and it would form this huge panoramic poster picture.
Neat.
And the top of it was the eagle flying over the desert, and then the bottom of it was them sitting around the campfire, because it was one giant image. But this guy took, and he said he didn't like that because it was a traditional album format. So he glued it shut so you couldn't do that. And so they're upside down on the inside of the album.
Trivia for you. I had no idea.
Yeah, me neither.
There's an Eagles documentary out there, The History of the Eagles. And the best part of that whole documentary, when it's talking to this guy, the artists, you know, it's cut scenes back and forth between them, and the art guys are like, well, this is why I designed it, and I have no idea why I did it. And then they cut to the executive guy, and he just shrugs his shoulders and goes, eh. And I'm like, you jerk.
Those creative types, they really get in the way of business.
Right.
Yeah. You know, another thing, though, about LPs or having the records, that it made you value them more, I think, because you had to be so careful with them.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. A scratch would ruin your world.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So you actually had to take care of these things. And when you loaned them to people, you had to loan them to, like, only certain people, because you knew so-and-so didn't take care of the records, you know? So the album itself had, like, an inherent value, as opposed to just being a song.
Well, and having music on albums, you know, one of the bands that I'm a huge fan of, even to this day, is the Alan Parsons Project. And they are what you called AOR, which stands for Album Oriented Rock. They actually stacked the tracks with the intention that you would listen to an entire side in sequence. And often they each kind of song subtly built on the previous one, and it told a bit of a story throughout it. There was a theme, and the other side was a different chapter of that, or a different theme maybe. And that's totally alien. You know, now we went to DVDs, we'll talk about later, and then you could jump around easily in tracks, and there was no album oriented anything. That's all, everything is singles driven, and you can jump to any track you want, just hear your favorite. But having that entire side, you know, jumping to the third track on there was a magic trick of being able to get that needle just right in the dark line between the two things, you know, and it goes squeak when you drop the needle. It was a different way of listening, not just only a different way of collecting.
Yeah,
and Mo, you talked about having those, which is awesome. You know, you got a big crate, like an Apple crate of your albums.
Milk crate.
You're flipping through.
Milk crate was the biggest thing to collect albums in. I used to have
several of those. Because it fit perfectly.
Yeah, perfect width.
Yep.
The other thing is, like, with the albums, like, if I happen to buy, like, you know, I bought, like, Pink Floyd, like Dark Side of the Moon or something like that, you wouldn't just listen to one song. You may have bought it for one song.
Right, your favorite.
You listen to the whole thing, right? Invariably, because either you're just too lazy to get up and change it, or
right? Yeah, there's no remote control.
Nope.
Right, there's no remote control. So I wound up appreciating a lot of these, like, smaller songs that today
non-radio songs, right?
Right, the non-radio ones that songs
released. Yeah, yep,
the deep cuts.
The deep cuts, exactly. Which today I don't think that even exists on modern music, does it?
Well, I mean, they still do that, but I don't know. Now it's almost as though there's a movement out there to find the deep cuts to be the guy who starts talking about the song that's not the pop song on the radio first, because of all social media and everything. So people are like, they'll listen to the newest album that's dropped by artist such and such, and they won't talk about the songs that everybody talks about. They're trying to find that one song that will then start a trend because they're the person who found it, kind of a thing, I've noticed.
Yeah, but I guess the deep cuts, though, always think, for me, they were like the more creative of the songs usually that the person had. Like, I'm a big, like, Peter Gabriel. You know, I listen
that's
to a lot
of you're able to kind of stretch out your comfort zone a little bit and try something. Because you're not trying for the radio edit version of something. It's let's try something experimental. We'll put it on somewhere deep in the first side, right?
Also, there's that whole music executive influence over it. The music executive would say, okay, artist, mister, you get 3 songs per side on the album that are yours to put on. We won't tell you how to do it. We won't edit it in any way. These are your songs. So those invariably became the deep cuts because, of course, the company wouldn't then promote those songs on
the
radio.
That's not the one's going to sell the album, right?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. It was only the ones that were part of the machine of pop music that would end up on the radio or the rock station or whatever it was, jazz music, whatever. But I found that made you feel a little bit more like you were in tune with the artist when you found those songs and could appreciate them because you felt like, okay, this is the stuff that's not influenced by the executives. This is just between that artist and me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the thing that gets me though is like today it's that whole media gratification kind of thing. And it's not bashing at anybody. It's just the way it is. Is that, you know, you listen to a song, you're like, eh, you skip it, right?
Right.
Yep. You may have to listen to a song a couple of times, and also you're like, wow, that's a really good song.
Before you get to the meat of it or kind of
right, exactly.
Understand what the artist was going for. Right. Yeah.
Sure.
Yep. And maybe you don't get there now. It's too easy to track skip or just say next.
Exactly.
Channel.
You just say up next. You know, you hit a button and you're on the next song, and you never even give it like a chance to kind of grow on you or to kind of for you to discover what's good about that particular music.
You know, the backside of that's got to put a lot of pressure on the artist because they have to come up with a song that will keep you from doing that now. Back then, they could produce more of what they wanted without having to think about that kind of a thing. But now, because it is so easy to skip a song and not listen to it, they have to really think, okay, what have I got to do in the first 20 seconds of this song?
That's
to
the
make
machine.
You stay?
Yeah. Yeah. We got to grab them in the first 5 seconds. They're hitting next. Yep.
Right.
Here it is, the new RCA Victor record, the modern, inexpensive way to enjoy music. Slip it between the pages of an ordinary sized book. That's right. It's only 7 inches across. Being made of vinylite, you can bounce them, slap them around, you can bend them without the slightest distortion of tone quality.
Could you use a helping hand on your next electronics project? Quad Hands is the ultimate third hand helping hands vice and hobby station. The first thing you'll notice is how heavy a Quad Hands is. It's made from solid steel and then coated with a baked on powder coat for a durable finish. And the rubber feet are going to keep it from sliding on your bench and give you a nice sturdy work surface. Those flexible all metal gooseneck arms feature rotating alligator clips to hold your boards and wires firmly in place. And removable silicone covers come pre-installed on those clips to protect those delicate wires and boards. And those arms can be put anywhere you need them. No fumbling around with awkward joints that are difficult to position. The Quad Hands was designed to help you do your best work. It's built to last right here in the USA and backed by a lifetime guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Order yours today from Amazon or quadhands.com. Gen X Grown Up Podcast listeners can save 20%. Just use offer code GenXUP20, that's GENXUP20. For your next project, let a Quad Hands hold what your hands create.
Well, George, you were talking about, you know, the marketability of things and how you can't jump around tracks. Mm-hmm. The next kind of format that we kind of collected was still vinyl, but the 45s, that's where they started singles out.
Yep. That's all the whole jukebox era style as well. You know, 45s were probably, I can't say they were specifically developed for jukeboxes, but I bet that was a heavy influence because the original albums, the 33 and the thirds, there was no need to break those up. You bought that album, you put it on your record player at home and you listen to it. But when people started wanting to listen to songs at the soda fountain or at the bar or wherever.
Out of the juke joint. Yep.
Yeah, they had to be in smaller formats so that you could switch in between. Plus, you were paying for them usually.
And out there, you want to hear just the hits. That's the point. Yeah. If you're ready to dance, I want to dance to this. I don't want to hear the melancholy track 3. You want to hear just these hits.
And those devices had to have the smaller record formats in order to be able to play a wider variety of music. Can you imagine having 133 and a third albums in a jukebox? That thing would be huge. Think about the carousel. Right. On that thing.
Yeah. It looked like a soda machine. It'd be enormous. Yeah.
Yeah.
God. Do you still remember having the little thing you needed for the middle of the 45?
That was like, just going to talk about.
Plastic thing. The
45
adapter.
Yep.
You know what I never understood is why did you need those?
Because it was cheaper to produce the 45s with a bigger hole because it took less vinyl. That was the whole point.
Seriously. Seriously.
Yep. It was just a money thing. It was cheaper for them to cut a bigger hole because that used less vinyl.
Did you ever not have the adapter and try to play a 45?
Yep. Of course. Of course. It gets a little wobbly.
It's never wobbly. Perfect. You hope it doesn't spin so fast that it, you know.
Yeah. You know, that like that emblem, that little kind of like, it's like a, what is it? Like a little hurricane looking shape, little three-armed salamander-y shape. That has become like a hipster badge of honor. I've seen like necklaces of those and tattoos of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm like, do you even know what that is? Or just, does that mean old music to you? Do you know that was just an adapter for my record to fit on my damn spindle? That's all it is.
Yeah. It's like they had the ones that usually came with your record player. That was like a big solid.
Like a solid block. Yeah.
Solid block.
But then you had the ones that you could adapt anything.
Yeah. Oh, did you guys ever have a record player that you could stack multiple records on?
I sure did.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it would just go to the next record.
And it would drop the record. It would move the arm out of the way, drop the record. Yep.
I guess it took a lot. I guess it was how you kind of did a playlist. But, you know, generally that means you're going to listen to the whole side of whatever albums are there.
Of course you are. Yeah.
Right. And so you would stack them certain things. Okay, I want to hear this side and this side and this side. And that could be 3 hours of music. Easy.
I knew people who bought two copies of the same album so they could have the A and B.
Oh, A and B.
They wouldn't have to get up and change anything. They would just put it on. It would be like
money
for a
to
dinner
burn
party
lazy
or
right
something.
There. Right. We're talking about 45s too. I mean, I just want to mention that 45 collecting was more like trading card collecting.
Hmm.
You kind of get together with your friend and you have like your little box of 45s. Like, oh, I have this and I have this and I have this. Do you have that one? And like, oh no, I haven't heard that yet. Well, let's trade this one. Whereas I think LPs were things that this is my collection that I have. Whereas 45s is more of a, it was a fluid thing that you would move around and swap maybe, or try to get all the 45s, all the singles that came out from a band. But 45s also created the whole concept of the B-side.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Typically, they would release, here is the hit song. And it was all kind of interesting to see, what are they going to put on the B-side? Is it going to be one of those deep tracks? Is it going to be another song they're trying to make radio famous?
Or alternate mix of the original song on the A-side?
Or the instrumental sometimes?
Right.
Sometimes you could only get those B-sides on the 45, which was cool.
Yeah.
Sometimes those were alternate tracks.
Oh, yeah. And it was funny when these like B-side songs that were famous. And of course, you know, there's usually not that many because there's a B-side, right?
Right.
Yeah, of course.
Like one is that on for the Beatles, they came with a 45 for Hey Jude, right?
Sure.
The flip side of that was Revolution.
Ah.
That was the B-side. Oh, wow.
That was the B-side of that song. It's just interesting because you never know. Like, those are like, oh, these hidden gems, I guess, you find on the B-side.
And sometimes they grow in popularity, right? You know, it depends on the people listening to it and who starts talking about it and how the word gets spread. Yeah.
Well, I remember in college listening to radio that there would be these late night stations that would be like B-side hour, and they'd only play B-sides.
Oh, sure. Great. That's smart.
I remember for my 45s, one of the biggest things for me was that it was easier to talk my parents into buying 45s when I was younger because they were cheaper.
They're like 99 cents or something.
Yeah,
or 49
cents. Less than that, like 75 cents, cheaper. 50 cents. But then also, I was really into TV show theme songs, and those were almost always released on 45s. Those were rarely on 33
album,
and a
really.
Thirds. Right. Yep. So I would have the one that I played to no end and learned how to sing and would have the fake microphone hairbrush in front of the mirror kind of thing.
Facts of life.
John, it's one of your favorite TV shows of all time, Greatest American Hero.
Nice. Give us a few bars, George.
Oh, hell no. No. No, not without the album, not without the courage of a 10-year-old boy standing in his bedroom in his pajamas. No, that's not
walking
happening.
On air, believe it or not.
Here's how to order.
For speedy delivery, call in the USA, 1-800-241-8444. Save the COD charges, send $7.99 for the records, $9.99 for 8-track or cassette tape to Conway Twitty, 948 South Grant Avenue, Department 19, Tacoma, Washington, 98405.
I'm a little older than you two guys, I know.
A little?
So,
a little.
Well, he's a little older than me. He's a little more older than
George. Telling somebody who's standing in the path of a tidal wave that they might get a little moist. What do you mean you're a little older than us?
Wow.
All right, enough of that. You guys probably don't have as much experience with this as I do, but I remember 8-track.
Oh, yeah, 8-tracks, absolutely.
Especially because 8-track was what you had to listen to. Basically, it was the only real car music when I was very little.
8-tracks were kind of, that was the portable music of my parents. We had them, but I don't think I ever bought any for myself, but boy, they were all around the house.
Yeah, my first compilation album experience was due to an 8-track. It was one of those things where they could combine combine a whole bunch of different people's songs on one thing and we could take it in the car and play it. That was what I remember the most about 8-tracks.
By various artists.
I just remember that, how, like, because you had the, basically it was 8 tracks. I mean, it was literally 8 tracks on a single spool.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. when you jump, though, it's like if you're in the middle of song one and you jump to song two, you're in the middle of song two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, I don't listen. But then you missed the beginning of the previous song. You're like, oh, crap. And it really wasn't much as far as fast forward, rewind. Didn't really work real well. And
8-tracks were horribly designed. I mean, if you ever taken one apart, it's basically a self-destructive engineering feat.
Yeah.
Because it is. The tape is drug across the spinning spool of tape. So it's constantly eroding away a little bit of the surface and grinding it down a bit. So they didn't last very well, or if you have them and were played much, they weren't very good quality. Literally, they were designed in such a way that they're self-destructive. It's like an iPhone. You know, it's like they're going to last a little while, then they're going to be worthless.
That might have been on purpose. I mean, that helped them to sell more 8-tracks because your 8-track would get worn out and used, and then you would have to go buy it again if you liked it.
And don't leave them in the sun.
But at least it was portable.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're not taking a 33 and a third in the car.
And the reason they had to do that was an 8-track is an infinite loop. There is no go to the beginning, go to the end. It's an infinite, constant loop.
Right.
There's no rewind in 8-track. There's just go to the next place.
You know, I always got confused because when I was younger, I would hear, you would have the 8-track cassette, right? And that was how you would listen to music on that device. But then later on, as I got older, I would hear artists talking about, well, we laid down these tracks and there was the lead singer track and the vocal, the drummer track. And I got completely confused because I had the 8-tracks was the only vernacular that I understood. I didn't know what tracks were in recording.
Gotcha. So the musical track nomenclature was getting confused with the tracks on an 8-track distribution method.
Exactly,
I got it.
Because that was all I knew as I was growing up.
Mm. Did you guys have any experience with reel-to-reel?
No.
Only a tiny bit. I had one hippie stoner uncle who used reel-to-reel.
My dad was a huge reel-to-reel guy.
Was it better quality than 8-track? Track, I'm guessing
they actually said the sound quality in 8-reel-to-reel. They to some people, of course,
it's huge.
Certain people say it's amazing.
Huh.
Yeah.
So the fact that you mentioned reel-to-reel, Mo, is a fantastic segue. Well done. Did you plan this?
I totally did.
The reel-to-reel is exactly what a cassette is in a smaller form factor. A reel-to-reel, they literally, you had a reel of magnetic tape that you had to spool up and put on a uptake reel.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get it going, if you look at that, it's 2 spinning reels. It looks just like a cassette.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think about that, but that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
So what a cassette is, they said, let's go ahead and lock that down. We'll put the take up reel and we'll have it all inside of a little container. And so you're having reel to reel on a smaller tape. That's what a cassette is.
Yeah. Hmm. And the width of the tape was the big issue back then because, you know, on the reel to reel, you know, it was like a half inch.
Yeah, right.
And so that gave it the range for playing the music, which they eventually, as technology got better, and then the things that read the magnetic tape got better, they were able to shrink it down into a cassette.
Huh. So are cassettes then inherently less quality than a standard half-inch reel-to-reel because they have magnetic space?
Oh,
yeah.
Is that what it is?
Okay. Fidelity is much, much lower, in fact, because not only is it went from a half-inch down to, I think, is it an eighth of an inch or quarter inch, whatever that is?
Yeah. It's small.
But also, it's that split in half because you have the A side, you can flip it over to the B side, so they're only recording on a half of the tape. A single tape.
I always wondered about that. So if you're looking at the strip of tape in a cassette, you're saying that the A side is just on the middle one edge, and then the A B side is the middle to the other edge?
Yep.
In fact, it's worse than that because there are 4 tracks. You have a left and right half, and you have
stereo.
A left and right other half.
Oh, if you had stereo. Oh.
Yeah, so a stereo cassette can only record on a quarter of the width of that cassette tape to get stereo.
Wow, so that's 1/32 of an inch if it was an eighth inch or a quarter inch tape.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Tiny.
Yeah, and still sounded awesome.
I mean, but now it didn't sound as good as an album, but it was definitely good enough for your Walkman, for sure.
Well,
of course.
Before you had the Walkman, though, I mean, those cassettes were cassette decks in cars and cassette decks that were attached to your album playing device, you know, your stereo, your home stereophonic system.
Yep.
But I always wondered what got them to that form factor, because if you look at a cassette, there's that little raised area where the magnetic magnetic tape is exposed to the world. And it's a little bit thicker there, I guess, for the pulley systems and stuff like that, mm-hmm. than it is throughout the rest of the cassette. Uh-huh. I always wondered why that area was set up that way. Why I didn't get why the whole cassette couldn't be a little bit thicker, because mm-hmm. it wasn't that much of a difference. It really, you know, was negligible between those two. I didn't understand why it needed to be that size. And then I also didn't understand why so much of that tape had to be exposed, because the reed head for the cassette player really only went in the little middle section of that exposed area. All the rest of that seemed to not be used. I didn't understand that.
Well, there are actually multiple heads that get attached there. So when it comes down to the player, part of the mechanism is inside of the cassette. You have the little foam pad that applies pressure right. to push it against the head. But many cassette players would have multiple heads that had to touch that tape, because if you were recording something, there was an erase head that had to hit before the record head hit. And then you had a play head, and those all hit at different locations on the tape. So those different little windows in the bottom of the tape would touch different heads based on what you were doing, if you were erasing or recording or playing. So it had different areas that it had to do. And unlike a VCR, it doesn't pull the tape out. That larger block, I think, is there because it has to push the mechanism of the tape player up into that area. There's right. machinery and rollers and stuff that had to fit inside of the cassette. And for those rollers to fit in there, they had to be a little wider to get that mechanism in there.
Wow.
I say one thing, that probably the single greatest invention that came out for cassette players was auto reverse.
Oh, yeah.
Without a doubt. Because it's like, you don't have to flip it over. And all they did really was put two reed heads in it, or the reed head could shift over a little bit. It's one of those two things.
That's right. Yeah, there's a great video on YouTube by Technology Connections where he talks all about those. And some companies actually flipped the head around.
Yeah, it just flipped.
And other companies actually put two heads in there.
Yeah, because the heads are super cheap too, I think, from a manufacturing standpoint. That one, and it also search forward to find the brakes.
Oh, auto-seek. 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 That is the best one. Yeah, auto-seek would high speed look for the next moment of silence and then rewind a little bit to where it was, and awesome. That was the best thing I've
ever had. You know what always scared me about auto reverse and auto seek though, was that giant ka-junk sound.
I know, it sounds terrible.
Like it was breaking everything on the universe, and you were like, oh my God, there goes my $6.99 cassette. But no, it was fine. It was just as loud as the machinery stopped doing what it was doing. Oh, I hated that.
Yeah, the scariest thing about those, it looks like two reels are cranking, and if they stop at the wrong time, it's going to snap your tape.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The cool thing is only one reel was actually moving. The other one was just being pulled along with the tape, because they would turn at different speeds. So really the ka-chunk was just the motor stopping, but boy, for all the world, it sounded like it was about to rip my tape in half.
That seems like one of the things though that could have caused the tapes to be worn out because of the stretching, because that's a very thin film.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
That had to be one of the reasons why your cassettes would wear out so quickly.
Over time, sure. Yep. And remember, they had different cassettes introduced the terrible hiss because of the analog encoding.
Right.
Yeah.
And so Dolby sound reduction came around because of that.
Yeah.
And then they introduced other types of takes, Type 2 and Type 3 and metal tapes.
Is that the She Blinded Me With Science Thomas Dolby guy? Is that the same guy?
Not the same guy. No. A different Dolby.
That sucks, because that guy should have been the guy to invent all that stuff.
All the sound reduction, the idea was like, hey, that hiss we're trying to get rid of. And so Dolby sound reduction would crank up extra high range and the same frequency as the hiss. And then when you electronically remove that frequency, enough of the signal's there so it sounds like the original audio should sound.
Huh.
But there's different, like there was Dolby A, Dolby B, there was... Yep. And then you had to figure out which one was the right one for different situations. And
I frankly, I never turned on Dolby because I liked the sound of more high end in my music. So I liked it to be
dull the sound.
It did dull it a little bit by pulling out the extra highs. I liked it to sound. I just deal with the hiss. I just turn it up louder. That's fine.
So how many times is like your tape deck just totally ate your tape?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and you pop it out.
And you had to pull out and you had to try to carefully unravel this tangled mess. You
get it out of the machine.
And then you get your pencil. To kind of respawn.
Gotta have a number two pencil. I don't know who decided that a pencil should be the exact same dimension. It was like having a half inch wrench. It fit perfectly in there.
It was always a perfect
right in
fit.
Little teeth. You could rewind your cassette.
The little flat parts of the pencil, if you had the they fit perfectly in there. Pencil, they would move the teeth of the reel. Yep. And you couldn't have a rounded pencil. It wouldn't work.
Yeah, the round pencil. Screw that. That's not a cassette type pencil.
I wonder if anybody ever marketed their pencils. Great for cassette tape rewinding.
Radio Shack has a super half-price deal now on an 8-track car stereo tape player. Regularly $59.95, now just $29.95. You save $30 and get your choice of music wherever you drive. Only only at Radio Shack, a Tandy company.
Drawn and Paneled is a brand new comic book focused podcast from Gen X Grown Up. Hey, I'm George.
And I'm Jason. Every Wednesday, we bring you news, reviews, interviews, insight, and commentary on the comic books we love.
And we cover everything from the Golden Age to the Modern Age. If you're a comic book fan who enjoys going beyond the page to learn about the history and creators who bring the characters to life, we're for you.
You can find Drawn and Paneled wherever you listen to podcasts or on our website at GenXGrownUp.com.
Talk to you guys soon. Okay, so we've talked all about the ways that we've enjoyed music, the different media formats and everything, but one platform of music is the selling platform, where you went to go get your music. Now, there are a lot of different places stores. You go, right? There were music stores. There were the local mom and pop shops that had the guy over there with the odd, weird, clear case of pipes that you weren't really sure what the pipes were for, right? When you were younger,
these guys
but then
love
figured
tobacco.
Out as you got older. Yeah. Why is that one shaped like the mermaid mast on a ship? I don't get what's going on there. Then there were the corporate versions of music stores. And I'm talking about the places like Turtles and
Tower
what was
Records,
the one that
Peaches.
Had the Tower Records out in California Records, that became yeah. a big West Coast thing. We never had Tower Records here, but Turtles was the one that I used to go to a lot when I was in my just getting my license years. I really enjoyed just the Walmart feel of the music store. You could just walk in and there was this giant place full of every kind of music you could want. Albums, cassettes, even a couple of 8-tracks over to the side in the dingy corner that nobody ever dusted. Where did you guys go to get your music?
So, I mean, my big place was probably Tower Records was the biggest store in New York at the time. And they were massive. It was actually 4 different floors. And every floor was a different type of music. One was just rock.
Oh, wow.
One was classical. One was jazz. I mean, they had that many albums. And it kind of goes back to something you said earlier, George, about the album art. Because, you know, the idea of flipping through rows of albums and you see eye-catching art, you're like, oh, what's that? You pull it out and, you know, you may give it a shot.
Yeah, like when we used to talk about the VHS tapes and everything, you go to the VHS store and it was that cover art on the VHS cassette.
That might be the thing that grabs you.
Made you watch that horror. Horrible martial arts film from, you know, some foreign country, Albania or something.
Yeah, but you find some really neat stuff in there too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I like the standalone ones or even the ones that are in the malls, you know, like the even today you have the FYEs and stuff like that. But
oh, yeah.
But, you know, back then, I think the one I went to a lot was called Peaches. That was somewhere in Orlando. It was very much like a Turtles, same kind of idea. For me, the idea of going to a music store, first, it was where you, unless you heard it on the radio and you were saying, oh, I heard that song. I want to go get that album. That's great. But for me, I spent more time in music stores discovering stuff.
Oh, you know, okay.
What is let's flip through the bees. Who's in here? What looks interesting? Let's go over to the cassette wall. Remember the wall of cassettes where they had a million little slots, but all the cassettes on the wall and all you could see was the edge of it.
There's a great spot in one of my favorite films, Jackie Brown, where one of the lead characters, he's been told about this music by one of the other lead characters, and he walks into one of those record stores, and he's looking through a wall of cassettes until he finds that one cassette by that group that has the song on it. I loved just seeing that in that film, because I remember, like you're saying, you just scan this giant,
preserve
like,
that kind of
ceiling.
Experience.
I don't think any of the ones on the very top ever got bought, though. That was too tall.
How could you?
To reach.
How could you? I would go in and, you know, we had a backtrack a few weeks ago. We talked about novelty music. And that's how I discovered a lot of the novelty stuff was you could go and look at rock and pop and country. But they would have a section of comedy, novelty, you know, stuff like that. And you'd flip through. And a lot of it was silly garbage shit. But sometimes there was gems in there. You know, like I was a fan of Monty Python, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Flipping through the comedy albums is how I found the Fire Sign Theater, another comedy troupe
Fire
that I would
Sign
never
Theater.
Have
wow.
discovered.
Yeah.
It's just because I was going looking for Monty Python and I stumbled across Fire Sign. And you might not accidentally do that online unless Fire Sign bought an ad to appear when I'm looking at Monty Python. But because you're in the record store and it's in the same genre and you had to flip through all those things, you had to manually page through the things that you weren't there for. And that's how I discovered.
Well, you know, you talk about Fire Sign Theater, unless they bought an ad to play during the Monty Python thing. That essentially it's taking the place of the music store employee snob. You remember this guy, you would go into the music store and you'd be looking through stuff. And you're like, can I help you find something? I'm just kind of browsing. Why are you browsing through that stuff? That's crap.
Yeah,
let me tell you about this
what
thing
you
here that you've never heard of. That's the truth. You need to come listen to this, you know.
If you were cultured and hip, dip, you would know this is really the hotness.
Yeah. Oh, you wouldn't listen to the popular stuff. Okay.
No. Yeah. Know, right.
That's over there. You know, the real music people listen to this section.
Right. Like the kid in Empire Records with the long stringy hair that also delivered pizzas and everything. He was like, this is the glue of the world, man. This is the stuff.
Glue of the world.
That was the kind of stuff that I remembered going to those music stores, because whether it was a corporate store or the local mom and pop shop, there was always one of those guys in that place that could help you find that deep track.
And you know, mm-hmm. when I was in high school, I probably had to go back to the music store about, I think I counted 4 times I repurchased the Beastie Boys' License to Ill because I wore that tape out playing it in my car.
Yep.
The fact that you could go to a record store and you could pick up a cassette and you could walk out, take off the shrink wrap, throw it in your deck and listen to it on the way home. That was a step up from having the experience back home with the 33 and a third. And so I had, just like you had your milk crate of albums, I expect we all had our box of cassettes there in the car mm-hmm. that you could swap out. Right?
Right in that passenger seat. Yep.
Yeah. If somebody wants to ride with you, got to throw that in the back. But I got my cassettes. You got them lined up and it only fits, you know, maybe it fits 30 or 40 cassettes or something tops. And so you got to pick of my cassettes, which ones live there, which ones are in the trunk.
No. Make sure that people put them back into the correct cases when they were done.
Damn it. That's right. Or put them back in the case at all. I don't want to just
make sure that they had the
around.
Spine up when they put it in the case, because yes, some please. Idiot would put it spine down right. and then you couldn't right. tell what it was.
The black blank back of the cassette doesn't tell me anything about what I'm getting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess the car would be the ultimate platform from our youth of how to experience music, because it was different than listening at home where your parents would be banging on the door. Turn that down. Why are you listening to that evil devil music? You know, all that kind of stuff. No, in your car, it was your world. It was your cassette. Yep. It was your environment that you controlled. 100%. Nobody else had any say-so over it. Before there was the Walkman or the personal play devices or the curated iHeartRadio kind of crap, that was your world. You were the DJ. Yep. You were the curator. You were the god of that music.
Well, let me tell you, like, I grew up in New York, so we didn't really have a car growing up. So the whole thing with me was headphones. I mean,
carriage and
be,
buggy
like,
system
big,
did you have?
Headphones.
Wow. No.
Well, we get in the horse and buggy, and then we go to the gramophone, and I crank that sucker
Amish.
Up. And... But as I was saying, was that
carry on, Mo.
It was like basically having the big giant headphones with the quarter inch. That goes into your record player.
The big coily wire on it. Yeah.
But let me tell you though, the sound of those things were actually amazing to me. Anyway.
Big over the ear headphones. Yeah. Yep. They didn't care about preserving your listening ability.
Yeah. I mean, a freaking nuclear bomb could be going off and you would not hear it. You know, if you had the headphones on, these things were just so huge. I mean, that's basically how we got like kind of like that quiet personal music. I mean, because otherwise it's, you know, like you said, you're sharing with everybody whether they like it or not.
Mm.
The Better Life is taking your favorite music wherever you go or taping it wherever you are with a Sanyo tape recorder. Sanyo has a fabulous variety of tape recorder values for school, for business, or just for fun. Sanyo tape recorders make sound unforgettable.
If there was anything in this show you'd like to learn more about, the show notes which accompany each episode are full of links to click and explore. Catch up on past episodes and get pinged every time a new one's released by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And you know, iTunes reviews help more than you know, so if you haven't yet, please rate and review us in the iTunes app. If you have a friend who hasn't yet discovered Gen X Grown Up, tell them about us. They will thank you later. You're our fourth listener, and we'd love to read your emails right here on the show, so hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. And finally, Gen X Grown Up is more than just this podcast. Our YouTube channel has hundreds of videos ready for you to enjoy. Plus, you can find our entire body of work on genxgrownup.com.
So that brings us to today. I mean, we had our platforms of the past. Vinyl, oddly enough, has made a weird resurgence. Like it was gone. And then all of a sudden, now it's the collector's edition because I think they're seeing the light. You know, the millennials are like, these big albums are fun to own. And all the artwork and the stuff we talked about, you know, they came around to our way of thinking.
I actually saw albums in a Target.
Really?
I know. Yep.
Believe it or not. Yeah. I saw albums. They were selling LPs. I was like, what's the
mainstream?
Hell?
And I would argue that people probably aren't listening to them as much
just
as they're collecting. Collecting them because just what we discovered growing up, those were great to own and have the art and be able to look at all the sleeves and the inserts and stuff.
Sometimes you just need to hold it in your hands, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes music also, George.
Yeah. It was that whole debate too, that when CDs first came out, albums still had better quality sound than a CD because an album is analog. So you have basically infinite range, you know, on it. Whereas digital, you know, you only have what the capacity of the system, whereas now though, digital is so huge that scientifically, I don't think you can hear a difference, but yeah, don't tell that to
some super hipster snobs can, but that's okay.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's different. You know, you'll get the pure sound. I'm like, no, actually, if you can hear that, then you have Superman hearing because you can pick up stuff that nobody else can pick up.
Look, I'm 47 years old. I can barely hear myself talk. There's no way in the world I'm going to tell the difference between a 33 and a third, a CD, iHeartRadio, whatever the hell anybody wants to listen to. I'm just happy I got to grow up in an era when a lot of this stuff was being developed and used for the first times.
And today you pretty much have two choices. I mean, we have CDs, which are still around. They're still a thing. You can still get them. Although, for my own part, I haven't bought a CD in I don't know how long.
I can't remember.
And that's because of the other way you get your music now, which is digitally, right? Everybody pretty much, if you want an album, if you want a song, you can go and get it. iTunes, we talked about at the top of the show, or any number of other, don't even buy the album, just subscribe to the service and get all you can eat, right? Constant. Right.
I can tell you though, it's the immediate gratification side of that though is, I mean, it's a good and bad thing. It's like we talked about with the video rental stores, right? Going there and the experience of going to a music shop was an experience unto itself, but there's something to be said for, wow, I want that one song I remember and be able to get it, download it, and listen to it.
That is nice. Yeah.
That is nice.
Yeah. So quickly, I'm going to go around. I'm going to start with George. George, how do you acquire and listen to music now today differently than you did when you were a kid?
Public domain.
Go and find it. Download it.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, no, honestly, that's pretty much it. Occasionally, I will have a need to pull out a record player and listen to a 33 and a third, like one of the old book story record things that we used to listen to, like G.I. Joe or those kind of things. But for pure music, I rarely listen to the albums or anything anymore, just simply because I don't have the device to play it on, and if I did, it would take up too much room in my office.
Yeah, if I have the need to listen to that record, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be ripping it digitally, so the next time I don't have to pull the record out.
Exactly.
Mo, how about you? What is your purchasing and acquiring and listening habits now? What's your platform?
This is going to be weird. I don't know why, but I have never pirated music. Like, no. I don't know why.
There you go.
I've always bought it because
George and I are just pieces of shit. Fair enough.
No, I mean, I've done plenty of other stuff, but don't ask me why. It's like for some weird, moral, odd reason that I cannot fathom even to myself. But they also made it so affordable that to pay a buck for a song to me is like nothing.
I hear you.
Or to pay, you know, $7 for an album. I'm like, I remember paying a lot more than that when I bought the album. But with that though, it's still the whole iTunes or Amazon Music, or that's where I get download
Spotify,
most of my music
something
from.
Like that.
Yeah, sure. Spotify.
Yeah. And I kind of get what you're saying too, Mo. Though I have certainly gone out and acquired, you know, without purchasing music because it's just so stupidly easy sometimes.
Yeah.
And for a long time, iTunes or other things, they would encrypt them. So once I got them, I couldn't get them on other platforms. So kind of I started doing that.
Yeah.
But there are artists, especially, I think you have a connection with the music artist you love the most, you know? So the guy who does our theme song, Beefy, right? A great nerdcore hip hop artist that I had once downloaded all his music. I since went back and have purchased his music from him because I wanted to support him. You know, there's certainly, you know, the big bands that you really like, you're going to buy their special edition stuff. You're going to buy the special green vinyl or whatever, that kind of thing. I almost don't download and collect music anymore at all because it's so easy. I've got Spotify Premium and you just tell Spotify what you want to hear and you hear it. You don't have to go find it or anything.
Yeah. And the variety they have on these things now is just amazing. To not find a song you're looking for on Spotify is pretty rare.
But I still have a crate of vinyl sitting in my house that are records I will never part with because I have a sentimental value to that. And I don't think anyone today is ever going to have a sentimental value for that MP3 the way we did with the albums.
Yeah, probably not.
If I said, like, what was the first album you ever bought? You guys could probably answer that question, right?
Mm-hmm.
I asked my kids, what was the first MP3 they ever downloaded? They all have no idea.
Couldn't tell you. Don't know.
Can I look at my sales history and look through the date? Maybe then they can
go through history or Amazon purchases. That's the only way you would know.
Amazon purchases, and I can see that, yeah.
Well, that is going to wrap it up for this Backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown Up Podcast. We were taking a look at Gen X music platforms, where we were, where we are today. I am John. Mo, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, man, this is always fun.
George, I sure appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
And fourth listener, we appreciate you most of all. We'll be back with a new show next week. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Bye, everybody.
No
This podcast is an affiliate of the GWW Radio Network. Visit Geeks Worldwide at thegww.com for news, reviews, and opinions on video games, comics, TV, cosplay, and more.
I would go to look at... Just stumble over your words, John. That's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.